Hi, and welcome to episode 75 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In today's episode, Steph and I are talking about the different steps each of us go through when preparing our work to sell. This is different for both of us because we each sell our work in different ways. I sell mine directly to customers via my newsletter and website, whereas Steph sells through retailers. In our conversation, we zone in on some of the challenging parts of the process, which for me includes lots of photo editing and time on the computer, and also those moments just after hitting publish. For Steph, it's deciding when her works are ready to let go and actually packaging them up and sending them off. I think each of us has these moments with different aspects of the journey. I really hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, this is Susan Nellicott and welcome to the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In these episodes, I throw open the doors to my art studio practice and how I run my business as a professional artist. Whether it be candid insider chats with my studio assistants Laura and Steph, or interviews with other creatives, or answering listener questions, there is something here for every emerging artist. I hope my journey can help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hello, Steph.
Hello, Sue.
How are you doing?
I'm really well, yeah.
It's good. Mm. It's a gorgeous day today. The sun is shining on a beautiful autumn day.
What's happening with you?
Well, I'm really glad we're here to chat, actually.
Go on.
I have something to unpack. But I think it might be something you want to unpack as well, so I think this will be a good one. So I'm in the process of preparing one of my latest collections of work, which is my Soul Signature series, for a series launch, a collection launch. Mm-hmm. And I'm having all the feelings.
Okay. Tell me about that.
It's not dramatic. When I say I'm having all the feelings, I know that I've been way more triggered by a collection release than I am by this one at the moment. But I also am aware that as the time draws nearer, the intensity will increase.
Okay.
Yeah, so the stage that I'm in at the moment is I've just photographed everything and scanned everything, all of the pieces from the collection. So I'm working through the drudgery of photo editing. Can you just please commiserate with me for a minute?
Yeah, no, I feel you. It's time consuming.
It's time consuming, but it's also feels so endless when you're in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And it's that computer-based work that is not, you know, it's not what lifts you up, let's just say that. Like it's not when you feel your best as an artist.
No, it's not. And I think also I carry along the baggage of I'm a bit of a jack of all trades of a lot of different technical systems within Adobe, but I'm not amazing at any of them. So I think I also feel really out of my comfort zone when I'm editing photos because I'm always like, am I doing it right? Have I done this process right? And I think each time I get a little bit better, but there's always just that little nagging, what haven't I done that I, what don't I know about that everyone else knows about that's in the back of my mind?
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So,
What's next? So hang on, we've gone from create the work, do the drudgery, launch the collection. Is that what's next?
Yeah, it all sounds so depressing, doesn't it?
So
this is the thing. This is actually what I want to turn around. This is what I'd really like this conversation to become, because I think I get in a real habit of also seeing the drudgery work. I call it drudgery work because it's not like what I'd prefer to be doing. And I have had my work sent out to be photographed and digitized before by other people. And I'm back at playing around with that again myself because I've found there's been issues sometimes with shipping the work to have it photographed because there's no one locally that's been able to do that for me. And then it comes back and the canvas is warped or whatever. So I've been exploring other ways of digitizing it myself. So I've kind of done...
skilled as well.
Well, I have.
Done some learning and you're able to do that yourself much
better.
It's
true. Well, I'm hoping. But I haven't done it before, you see. So there's always a little bit of have I done it right? Because they're all hacks that I'm like bringing in from different YouTube videos and friends that have told me things.
I love it.
I love it. I love that aspect of it too, the figuring it out. But then when I have to do it like 25 times over in a row is when it gets a bit.
Okay. Well, once you've done it 25 times and you've refined it all, let's record a podcast about that. Teach us all your hacks.
Sounds good. So yeah, I'm battling a bit with that whole sitting down each day and doing that. So a way that I'm going to try and turn that around for me and remove that feeling of drudgery mm-hmm. is to inject a little bit of art making time in my day.
Okay.
So this is the big challenge that I'm finding at the moment. And I think we've talked before about how I tend to work in seasons.
Yes.
So what I feel like will really help me is to not just do the photo editing. Like if there's a little bit of creativity in my day, that might actually really help to just not feel like it's all drudgery, because it only feels like drudgery because I'm making it a drudgery, right?
Yeah, and I actually want to point out that you're actually being smart in your use of time, because you're batching that. You're in those programs. You're doing that those in the most efficient way. Yeah, it feels like drudgery, but you're actually being really smart with your time.
Well, and you kind of have, you like me, like you get your head in it. You don't want to get your head out of it before you complete it, because mm-hmm. it's such a shift from like creative work and other elements of the work. And I'm also super aware that without making this part of the process really beautiful and high quality, the only person I'm disserving is myself and my ability to convey the beauty of what I've created.
Yes.
So that's kind of the first thing that I've been battling with around this sales process, is the photographing and the documentation and the duration of that process.
Yeah.
The other thing I've done is I'm giving myself more time to do that than I've done before, because it always takes such a long time. And I think sometimes I just kind of think, well, you can just do that faster. And then I just feel really frustrated.
Because you've set unrealistic expectations for yourself?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And also, like, don't expect it to happen fast, because it just doesn't. Like, no. Find a way to slow down and be with the process and kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else that I'm kind of exploring. How about you? How do you go with this part of the process?
Well, I want to talk about something you said about shifting your mindset. Is that what you mm-hmm. said? What did you say? Shifting your...
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. The shift from creation mode to sales mode.
That's tricky.
It's really tricky. And I don't actually believe that I can exist in both modes at once.
I can't either. And that's why I don't do it that way. But tell me your experience.
Well, like you go through a period of creation and then I have a giant pile of work. And now, I mean, I do this as a business. This is my job. So it's not serving me unless it reaches other people's homes. Like unless it's hung on someone else's wall.
It's true.
It's not fulfilled its purpose for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I do. I've had to actively shift my mindset. I've had to go, okay, time to put that brush down. And time to pack some flipping work and get it out of your studio.
Okay. So if you've packed it, it's obviously going somewhere.
I haven't packed it.
Is it going? It's going to a shop, I assume, because that's your business model.
I've got three stores that need fresh work. Yeah. And the only thing stopping getting out there is me. And that's because
you don't like to pack stuff.
Well, I ain't packing stuff. But I mean, I think also I'm just allowing that to take the time that it takes. Like you say, when you do the photo editing, it just takes the time that it takes. So I'm allowing the shift to take the time that it takes. Because for me, it's not just like flicking a switch.
Which actually sits beautifully with the conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, actually, around cycles. Like,
yeah.
And I want to bring that awareness to what I was talking about in terms of that wanting to speed things up and finish them quicker than they need to take. Because, mm-hmm. like, that is such a source of dissatisfaction and frustration for me. So I think that sounds like for both of us, that's something that we can both do to just relieve the stress of it, is allow it to take the time that it takes.
I think a lot of artists work this way in that they release collections. And that's how they bookend these processes. There's a creative period. They create a number of works and then they switch gears. They're not creating work, photographing it, documenting it, making all the files in one day and putting it on their website for sale. That's not what they do. Like,
because you can't.
Well, you can't. That's right. It's not realistic. So, yeah, like accepting that there's this. Yeah, so this is the first time I've really done that, though, worked in a collection. Okay. It has been a little bit more hand-to-mouth or a little bit more, I have to get this done quickly because someone's waiting for it. So chop, chop. So this is the first time that I've kind of accumulated work. And the reason that's happened is I have changed the scale slightly of my work and the format. So I've been playing with some things that have needed time to evolve. And now they sit as a collection that works together. I'm ready to sort of put that out into the world. But it did need a kick up the bum, to be honest.
Oh, did you? So how did that arrive?
I invited Laura over to my studio, actually. And she was like, okay, do this, do that. Make a pile of what's going where. Send the email telling them it's coming, because that's how you work best, is when there's someone waiting for you to fulfill. That okay. Really, like, gets me moving.
Gosh, sometimes you do just really need the friends that know you best and yes. know your blocks the best to come mm-hmm. in and go, this is what will help you.
That's right. And it was like over a cup of tea. I was whining about it. She was like, come on. Let's do it right
oh,
now.
Oh, good on it.
I was like, thank you. I really needed that.
Good job, Laura.
Yeah. Yeah, well done, Laura. But, I mean, do you find it easy to shift gears? Are you like, okay, the collection is complete. I'm ready now to change gears?
Yes and no. I feel like I've been through enough cycles of, because I work in collections as well. These days I've similar to you, like, worked for in a more hand-to-mouth way, or and there was a period, like, you know, a few years ago when I just sold loads of stuff straight off of Instagram. But then selling it that way didn't work so well, in terms of you sell a piece, then you have to ship it, and shipping takes forever, and then you're just really disrupting your creative flow in other yes. ways. So for me, that was one of the really big appeals of working in collections, is then you can actually batch your shipping process, which I like batching my shipping process. Yeah. I just like to get it over and done with and do a couple of days of hardcore packing. You've got out all the things, you've ordered all the stuff you need, and you just do it, and then it's done for a while, and then you don't have to do it again for a while.
Yes.
You know, apart from those odd bits and pieces people buy, or prints or whatever, that people buy just off the cuff. But with the photography side of things, so there was a little bit of a impetus for the break between the series finishing and this period starting, which is that we had a photo shoot done in the studio with our favorite photographer, Melissa Brennan, who we had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And which
that was a big thing,
it
babe.
Was huge. Like, that was it was monster. Huge. And that was part of the reason, actually, why, because I've actually got three collections of work that I need to kind of package up and sell as collections over the next little while. And the reason I did it that way, apart from that, like, my creativity is just very unruly and unpredictable, and that's what happened. I did want to capture a few different bodies of work in that photo shoot.
Right.
So that was something, you know, that created a natural break between kind of the end of the series and, okay, we're complete and now we're going to move on. But yeah, I always find it like, I'm not a natural Adobe person. It doesn't thrill me to get on the Adobe suite and do things. I can do it, and I've learned to do it, because it's pretty much a necessary skill to just have. Well, in my opinion, I think yeah. it's a really worthy skill to invest in. In fact, I've even started teaching my daughter, who's 9, how to use some of the Adobe products, because I'm pretty sure she's going to be an artist of some description. And I know that for her generation, particularly, the sooner she gets in there and learns a basic working knowledge of, you know, Photoshop, InDesign, Illustrator, Procreate, all of these, well, Procreate's, yeah, that's Adobe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Such great skill to have. And yes. having a working knowledge as a creative, you know, I learned a while ago that was really important. But I don't love it. So what I'm working on is not hating it.
Okay, that's interesting. I like that. Okay. So how do you make a task that has a potential to be painful but is necessary? How are you working on not hating it? So what are you doing?
I'm not forcing myself to do it for 8 hours a day.
Well, no.
Because I don't have 8 hours a day. That helps. So I kind of started out hard and fast because I find the way it works is I go in going, okay, I really build myself up. I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. We can do it. We can do it. It's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And then I get in there and then after 2 or 3 days, I'm like, ugh.
2 or 3 days, Suze, that's a long time.
Well, I've had a lot of work to digitize.
Yeah.
And I've also had a new piece of equipment come into the studio, a scanner that I've been learning to use. So I've been on that whole, you know, that tech thing, yes, of learning to use a new thing and making sure you're using it correctly.
Yes.
And it's going to simplify things greatly for me. But I still had to get over the hump, the tech hump. So
you said you're using breaking your day up by putting painting in there. Is that as a reward or an incentive? Like, how are you using that to help you get through?
I
don't know
yet because I haven't done it yet. I just decided last night I'm doing it.
I love that. Very fresh. Okay.
It's literally like, because I'm only this week, sort of the first week I've really been deeply in the process. Oh, I'm just going to set some watercolor up. Watercolor is the best go-to for really quick, easy, creative play.
Yeah, immediate, no pressure. Yeah.
And also I find working with watercolor very therapeutic. So I think that's a really great medium for me to be doing while I'm, you know, just having something to splash around in for 5 or 10 minutes and even just to take a brain break, and I can have it set up on the table next to where the computer is and just go and have a little 5 minute play, and it can be completely no pressure. I don't have to create really great work, and I'm sure in itself it's just going to be really beautiful.
Love it.
But I'm going to use my superpower that I am a creative to my benefit to move through this phase of digitizing my work and getting it ready to put out there in the world. And I think it'll help me too as I move further, because let's talk for a minute about the, you know, once you get to the tail end of this, because I'm getting there now. Like, I've still got a few days work left on the photo stuff. But then I'm getting to the stage where now I need to prep it for sale. So let's unpack that.
Yes, because that's the next shift.
Now, this looks different for you because you don't sell the way I do. So why don't you talk about that first?
Okay, well, I guess this is an example of setting up your business so that it suits your strengths and avoids your weaknesses or things that you don't really want to spend your time doing. So because I'm not selling my product online, I'm selling my artwork in store, I don't have to create as strong a story that is told digitally through imagery. So when you're documenting your work, you're not just creating a flat one-dimensional record of your of what you created in painting form. You're telling a rich story. Like the imagery that you've created is beyond just what this art
maybe
looks
I
like.
Should just step through that for people, the kind of imagery that I create to sell a collection, because that might be helpful to people.
I think
out
it would
there
be really useful. Yeah,
so I'm first of all getting a high res image of my painting, whether it be on paper or on canvas.
So you're doing that via a scan or photography?
Either. So smaller work is now going in my scanner. Mm-hmm. And larger work I photograph. I prep and I Photoshop and I do all this at once because I don't like to backtrack and go back to doing these jobs. I want to complete them all at once so that they're done, that collection's done. I've made the mistake before of not completing all aspects of the job when you're doing that collection, because the trick is when you're preparing photos is color correcting and making sure that that high res image, which will later on for me become the source of a print or also licensed products, it needs to be done while you still have the artwork before it sells.
Absolutely.
So there's that photo. Then there's also I will take photographs of the work in certain situations that look really beautiful for marketing. Mm-hmm. So whether that be like a propped studio shot or on a table with some beautiful flat lay, and there'll be that set of photos. Mm-hmm. Then they'll have photographs that will come from Melissa that will be sort of in studio action, kind of made it look beautiful, ridiculous, which I don't always do for every collection, but for these three collections that are coming this year, that will have happened because we were able to do that.
Yeah.
So it's quite – and then you sometimes you want to have detail shots of certain aspects of the painting, which you can actually pull from the high-res image if you want to, but sometimes it's nice to cap – like if you paint around the edges of your canvas, for example, you might want to photograph it from the side so people can see that. Some people like to do a photograph of their signature. So we're talking about a decent amount of photos.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought I'd step that out for people so they understand the scope of what I'm doing. And actually,
there's another type of imagery that you do right at the end. You take that image, the high-res image, and then you Photoshop that into an interior.
Oh, yeah, that one. I totally forgot about that one, which is a whole nother day.
Yeah, it is.
So I actually buy stock photography and then I Photoshop it in to put it in an interior and so people can visualize it. You don't have to do that, and that's something I have done in the past. I may think about that again for the future. I'm not sure how well that converts these days. I feel like it's become a very common – it used to work very well for me, and I don't know it's working that well for me anymore.
Yeah, I think – but it does. It is very helpful in terms of showing general scale, like it showing is. Your painting next to an armchair.
It's true.
Lets people think how that's going to physically fit into their home and – the scale.
So I no longer have Laura helping me in the studio with that stuff. She used to do a lot of my photo editing things in studio, so she would do a lot of those, what are they called,
in situ.
Yes, thank you. Well, so if there's anyone out there in Ballarat who wants to do a bit of Photoshop for me, give me a message. So that's something I'm going to have to think about for the future is if I want to find someone to come in and help me with this stuff at the moment. But, you know, I find it's really good as a business person, as a general practice, even when you've handed things off to other people to do in your business, to every now and again get really down and dirty with the processes that you're doing, because sometimes you improve them. And that actually has happened recently with how we've been digitizing artwork, had a bit of a breakthrough with how to photograph and prepare print files for large works on canvas, and it's totally transformed the way we used to work. So I've actually felt like it's kind of necessary for me to go through this phase of doing it myself again, so I can really hone that process before I hand it off again. Hey guys, are you loving what you're hearing on the podcast and craving a bit more from my studio? Then consider checking out my e-course trilogy, Painting as a Practice, playful classes in mixed media painting designed to nurture your authentic style. If you're a beginner painter or seeking some fresh new approaches in your art, then check out Chapter 1, Laying Solid Foundations. Or if you'd like to learn more about my ways with colour and mixed media art supplies, then Chapter 2 is a great option. And if you're seeking to really hone your creative style or learn how to create a series of larger works on canvas, then Chapter 3 is a brilliant option. Each chapter is just $77 each, or you can pick up the discounted bundle of all three courses for just $219. To learn more, be sure to head on over to the link in the show notes or susannethercutstudio.com/online-classes. I'll see you soon.
Back to a question you asked me earlier. I bypass all of that stuff
because I don't want to see it. Steph's smart.
Well, I'm not smart. I mean, look.
Tell us about that. So how are you smart and how are you not smart?
Okay, well, I'm smart because I don't want to do that. So I skip that step. But I'm not smart in that I make less money on each sale because I'm not doing that. So
yeah, I totally get that because I've investigated this avenue a bit and it may still be something that I'll try out in the future working with retailers. And it's similar to gallery owners as well. Yeah. But having I've really only ever sold my own work. I've never been represented by someone else. So I'm used to getting the full paycheck. And every time I actually consider how much gets given to that person, I continually come back to, well, why wouldn't I just keep doing what I'm doing? But then you're not sitting in front of the computer for 2 weeks on Photoshop. So,
and, you know, if time equals money, then in my perception, that percentage that the retailer takes is well worth it. I'm in a very different position to you, as you are. Like, your audience is much larger as well. So for me, it's almost like a channel of marketing using retailers to sell my work. But yeah, I do still make digital records of them, so that I have that for reference, just in case I decide to do something with that in the future. I also send that imagery to the store so that they can use it through their marketing channels, and I know that it's color matched properly and, you know, all those things. But then I just pack them up and send them to the stores. Not individual paintings. I send, I don't know, 6 or so at a time. And that's that. Done.
That's so smart, even from the point of view that it's so much safer for the paintings to be sent all packaged up safely together than little single ones too.
Yeah, and it works out cheaper as well, because I'm not having to, you know, do all these individual packages that come at a minimum cost to ship, you know. When it's all put together, it works out a bit better. I'm not sending to individual people, so there isn't all that individual time and labor in labeling and filling out customs forms and all that kind of stuff. And then I just get paid. So that I like that works for me, because I think we said before that when I'm bogged down in systems, that's when I get stuck. Yep. So I know myself well enough to bypass that, and I'm essentially paying someone else to do all those things for me,
which from my perspective where I'm sitting right now is really smart. So tell me, is there a part of the process that you do to sell your work through the retailers edgy for you?
Yes.
Which parts?
The bit before they're packed and ready to send.
Why is that?
Because I have to be brave enough to trust that anyone is going to want my work.
Oh, because you're selling on consignment, right?
Yes, I am.
And you're trusting the retailer to sell your work for
you? No, I'm trusting that anyone wants it. So it's that vulnerability of my creation is leaving the studio and going into the world for judgment of others. And that's the edgy place for me. And sometimes it feels safer to just hoard those paintings in my studio than to feel vulnerable.
Yeah.
So that's the edge. Once they're out, it's fine.
It's I don't just care anymore. It's, yeah, that's when it hits you. So that's interesting that you still haven't shipped them.
No.
Are you still stuck in that moment?
Yes. However,
we've had this conversation.
However, the motivation for me to get it done is money. It's cash flow. Well, I mean,
it is for any of it, isn't it? Like, well, I don't know.
Some of us are more motivated by that than others, but for me, it's a motivating factor.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I've you know, it's time for that next chunk of money to come in. And the only way that's going to happen is if you let this art into the world. So on you go, Steph. Chop, chop. Get on with it. Start reaping the rewards of your work.
Yeah.
So that's a good little motivator for me. So I'm going to lean into that the next couple of days and just pack stuff up and get it out there.
Yeah, you'll get it done.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a new thing. You know, it's a different scale, like I think I mentioned, in a different... slightly different format, so that feels more vulnerable. It's like, oh, is this...
Do retailers choose?
It depends. I have a preferred retailer that I give first choice to, but to be honest, now the relationship has evolved. I think I have a really good feeling for her customers and what's going to resonate with them the best. So I do... But also there are pieces that I like better, and I try to like... This is silly, but I try to be fair. I try to let go. These are my favorites. I'll divvy those up. But also from a sales context, I think that I have a fairly good feeling as to what's going to move more quickly. And you know the expression, bring them in with diamonds and send them out with rhinestones? It's about like
a mark. I've never heard that before. Really? Sorry, I'm just unpacking that mentally.
It's like a retail thing where you attract people with the most expensive, blingy, shiny, beautiful, but then they leave with what's within their budget and it gives them a small taste of the experience.
Right.
Those are like your best sellers, yep. You know? So I think that through. I think, well, what's the like big, expensive, shiny piece here? And then I package that up with the supporting cast.
The supporting cast are the ones that sell. I'll be really interested to know, though, if it plays out in that way. Like, because I'm constantly surprised at what sells and what doesn't. Like, some of my absolute favourite pieces ever are still in my home, which probably means they're mine.
Yeah. Look, you're not always the best. I'm not always the best judge of my own work. But, yeah, that's my thing. So some retailers prefer me to check in with them before I send work so they can get a vibe for what's in there. Some people like to be, particularly the stores that buy wholesale, so they pay for it before it goes to the store. They like to choose, to pick and choose. But I don't know. I'm still learning. I'm still finding this out. I'm just making up as I go along, really.
Yeah, in case you hadn't figured that out, that's pretty much our entire life and business. Figure it out as you go along. This is the Figure It Out As You Go Along podcast.
That probably already exists, Susan.
So how long does it usually take for things to sell?
It depends, but yeah. I don't know. It can be anywhere between a few days to a few months.
Yeah.
And I usually find that there'll be one or two pieces lingering in store and that's the point that I top up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still figuring out. I do want to know, though, how you feel about the next stage, though, because is that the release of the collection feels to me like it's quite a vulnerable place for
it's
you.
It's the hardest of all, and I find that very edgy.
So what point does that hit you? So what do you do? You've got all your imagery prepped.
I've got all my imagery prepped, and then I create the shop, mm-hmm. the shop that contains that collection, mm-hmm. get that all looking beautiful, loaded up. And then because I use Squarespace, I can set a time for when they actually appear in the store. And what I do, because I have a VIP list, so my collectors club, mm-hmm. is I release it to them first exclusively before it goes out to the public. So that goes into a special shop, a special VIP shop, and they can shop within that shop first.
And that then, has like a, was it password protected, yeah. or something? Yep. Okay.
So they get an emailed password. So then I'm also prepping newsletters as well that have teaser imagery in there, which I actually don't find nearly as stressful as I used to since I started using Flowdesk, which is the newsletter template, that the newsletter delivery service that I love.
Yeah, it's quite intuitive, yeah.
And it's beautiful. It does really beautiful emails for art. It's definitely by far the best one that I've used.
And we have used a few.
We have. What have we been through? I did MailChimp. I did ConvertKit. I went back to MailChimp, mm-hmm. and then went to Flowdesk. Mm-hmm. So we really have tried out a few systems. And so that isn't as hard as it used to be. And I'm getting better and better and more fluent with it. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, that moment when I send out to my VIP, and, you know, I think we've done episodes before on the refresh, refresh, refresh scenario. Uh-huh. So what I usually do is I press send and then I leave my home and I go somewhere out in nature that and try to stay off my phone. I think sometimes I've done it and I've actually left my phone at home, so I can't do that.
Okay, so that's really triggering for you.
Oh, yeah, totally. So I need to really build a lot of awareness around that this time. And it's something every time I come around to it, as much as I find that part of the process difficult, I don't want it to master me.
Yeah.
I really want to have compassion for that person within that little one within me that is so afraid in that moment because they think that this is not the truth, this is a belief, that comes up for me every time I go through this process, that somehow my worth is measured by how many people buy my art.
Yes.
So every time I go through this process is an opportunity for me to get into that old program that gets triggered every single time, so it doesn't go away for me, and to reassure myself that this is not a measure of my worth.
Yeah.
And that no matter what happens with how many pieces get sold, my work is beautiful and meaningful, and there are people out there that love it. And I
so
love it.
And so are you.
Oh, thank you.
Beautiful and meaningful.
But this is the thing, right? Like we and I don't think there's enough said about this actually, in terms of people, artists seeing that moment as an opportunity, because I know everyone comes up against this in their own way. You've just described to me your way. I'm just describing my way. And I can guarantee that just about every other artist out there listening to this podcast has some big stuff come up for them, big emotional edges, when they put their work out to sell it.
Yes.
And it is an opportunity to actually reparent yourself in that regard and reassure yourself that this is not the end of the world. This is something that you love, that you've put a lot of love and energy into, but whether or not other people immediately jump on it and buy it, because that's the other thing, is yeah. the pressure to sell out a collection in 7 seconds.
Look, I think this comes from a bit of an Instagram myth here. I think that really perpetuates that.
Like, can you see it? And it's you know, when you see that happening to other, I understand they want to tell everyone about how this happened to them. And I've been guilty of this before too. And I'm trying to be more mindful of it now, to not make a big deal if you have a raving success about something, because most of the time it isn't like that.
No.
Most of the time, you know, within the first hour you've sold one or two pieces, you know.
If you're lucky, yeah.
And that's amazing.
Very lucky. One or two pieces.
Right? So, but like I had this period when my Instagram first blew up that pretty much everything I made sold really quickly and I couldn't even keep up with demand. But it has not remained that way over time. It has changed, and it's partly changed because I changed my business model and started to sell in collections mm-hmm. rather than just off Instagram, because it made more sense. But selling in that way and having that kind of validation didn't in any way heal that inner part of me that whose inner worth is questioned every time I go to sell something and dependent on if I do or I don't.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I mean, every time I launch a collection, you're very aware too that I'm going to go through my stuff.
Yeah.
And you check in with me, which is very kind. But I think over the last couple I've improved a bit.
But you've improved a lot.
Yeah.
I think you used to put a lot of pressure on yourself, and it was a very vulnerable time for you.
And the vulnerability hasn't changed, and the feelings coming up hasn't changed. What has changed is how charged those feelings are, and also my self-talk around, you know, when those feelings come up, going, the source of this feeling is that you think you're not worthwhile if you don't sell your work. So that's not true.
No, and I think you move through it quicker.
Mm.
Doesn't mean it's not there, but you move through the stages of processing those feelings much faster with much less fallout for yourself.
Yeah.
So go you.
Thanks, Steph. You're such an amazing mirror for me. May everyone have a Steph.
I'm available. Okay, so Soul Signature is one of your latest collections. How can people find out more about that?
I will just jump on the newsletter list, sign up to my collector's club. Which...
Okay, this is different, isn't it, to your educators?
Yes. So I have two education newsletter lists. So if you're getting newsletters about this podcast, that is a different newsletter list to the one where I sell my art, because they're very different audiences. And side note, if you have an education component to your business, you probably want to, and you also sell art, you probably want to separate them, because not everyone that buys your art wants to hear about every time you sell an education product.
And vice versa.
So that's my 10 cents worth on that one. So yeah, if people, there'll be a link in the show notes too, but I have a whole other website which I sell my art on, which is susannethercutt.com. And there are probably about 5,000 places scattered about that website where you can click a button and sign up to join my collector's club.
And get on that VIP.
And get on that list so you can get first access.
Right, great. Awesome. Can't wait to check it
out. How about you, Steph? Where can people find you?
Shops.
Do you do the newsletter thing?
No, we don't do a newsletter thing.
Do you have a stockist list on your website?
I am a total rebel. I don't put anything on my website. No. Look, my Instagram. I keep people updated of what's going where. And I should probably do that, shouldn't I? With
stockists. Yep.
Yeah.
If you're selling through a wholesale avenue, then have a stockist list.
Or you can just message me and ask me to buy something.
Yeah. Give me your money. You have the business model you have. Well, thanks, Steph. It's been another great conversation today.
All right. Speak later, Suze.
Catch you soon, everyone. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.